Hello, you're listening to Me and Paranormal You with your host, Ryan Singer. Because it's more fun to believe.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to another experience of Me and Paranormal You. Excited to bring back to the program for the second time, Becky Sadathai. Thank you for joining the show again, Becky.
Thanks for having me.
I mean, there's a lot to cover. There's a lot to talk about. There's, you know,
about the lights dimming. Somebody's like using a saw outside. It's not ghosts.
I wouldn't worry about that. Yeah. I mean, I think most people are just going to be listening to it anyway. So, and the patrons, obviously you'll be able to see the video, but I think, I don't think they mind. It would be kind of interesting though if a ghost.
Yeah, if it was ghost, if only. I had something like that happen before, but it was not the same. This is like there was a saw running outside.
Yeah, it would be interesting too. It's like that's the thing that's always kind of fascinated me with certain paranormal activity. It's like such kind of low level. I don't want to say trolling, but you know, it's like this low level of like.
Like you know, the ghost like, shows, some of them, like, yeah, it's like, oh my gosh, it's so obvious that somebody is, you know, messing with them.
Yeah. Like, and it's like, you know, when you're little kids and you do those like games that are like, you put your finger close to like your, you know, another kid's face and you just say, I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you. And you're just really close to their face. And it's like, it feels like some of the paranormal activity is almost in that. It's almost like a teasing kind of like, oh, we're just going to turn down your lights. We're just going to keep turning down your lights.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of it with ghosts is too, you know, with real ones. I mean, it is like that because they're just sometimes it is kids.
yeah. And it makes sense in that way, I suppose. The last time we talked a lot about astral projection and, you know, traveling to the far reaches of the universe without even really having to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And this time, I mean, you just messaged me something interesting right before we started. I saw it and I am curious because I haven't really had a conversation with anybody about this, about the monoliths that have been appearing around the world. I've got some ideas about that, but
it's a grid, and I don't think that they're disappear. Some of them are fake, of course. Some of them are just fake, and I think it's pretty obvious which ones are which because, like, all the ones that are the same are the same, and they're like all over. And as soon as one will disappear, it'll appear somewhere else. And I think that they're not disappearing; they're dematerializing, or they're becoming invisible, or they're like they're blinking in and out.
It almost reminds me of the whack-a-mole game, like a Chuck E. Cheese, like one disappears and it pops up everywhere or a different
Except
place.
I think they're still there whenever they disappear, the ones that are real ones.
Okay. And the ones that aren't real, obviously, are the ones where people take photos and you can see the screws and you can see the
and
lines.
Welding and and I don't know about the one that has the three latitude and longitudes. One of them's like for the pyramids in Giza. One's like out in the middle, an island in the middle of the ocean, and something else. I forget, but I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't really know. I haven't kept up with it because I know when they discovered the first one, and then as soon as news broke about that first mysterious monolith popping up, then all of a sudden these, you know, clearly man-made monoliths started popping up everywhere. And then some young, like hardcore Christian dudes went out and took one down and videotaped themselves being like, we will not let, you know, no threats to the Christian God. And then they also threw in some bullshit talk about like immigration at the same time.
Yeah, that was the one in California somewhere, Sacramento or something. Yeah, I remember
just
that.
Like, you know, whether or not those people were, you know, they true like. It's hard to tell the difference between people like trying to spoof and make satire sometimes and actually just people who are filled with hatred and not able to
wrap guys their brain around. Like the latter kind.
Yeah, it seemed like it. Lately. It seemed like it. There's, I mean, it's just because I always do wonder, like sometimes my mom or somebody of that generation will say something to me like, and they'll bring up something and I'm like, well, no, this is clearly a joke. You don't understand that this is like, this isn't a real thing. Like whether it's a character, a comedic character or something that's happening on the internet. And like, they'll have no idea that it is a character or satire.
Yeah.
And so I wonder at what point do I reach a certain age where I just have no clue about being able to discern between what is actually being satire and what is real, right?
See, and I think that we, like, you're a similar age to me. Like, you were born in like the 70s?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we are the, like, changeover. We had internet, but not like the whole time we were kids. And so we're like the transition generation. And so I don't think that we're going to have a lot of those same things, because it's like, I still listen to, I listen to new music. I am decent on tech. You know, it's like, I don't fall for BS. I don't know. And I was raised like, I wasn't raised religious really, but I got to go to church with my friends and I was really curious about spirituality and stuff like that. But I knew what was lies and what was true and what to take as a parable or to take literally. I don't know. It's just,
well, that makes sense. Maybe I'm underestimating my ability to be able to discern between these things.
Yeah, I don't think it necessarily happens to you. Maybe if you have some memory problems or something when you're older, God forbid, but
yeah, I'm curious too. And you mentioned the word grid when it comes to the monoliths and potentially what is this grid doing?
They are. It's a grid system. I think that something came online at the full moon at Halloween. My friend Ashley had a very very small, like maybe 5-6 people at a time Halloween party. And we were all socially distanced and stuff, but she like had her heart set on me coming to read tarot cards. So I came and read tarot cards and I was not looking forward to it really, because that usually leaves me really drained. But I did like probably like 10 to 15, 45 minute readings.
Wow.
Like, yeah. And I was like totally energized and the people were energized. Everybody had good readings except for one person. He didn't really, I don't think he concentrated on his question though, or he didn't have a specific one.
Well, the exception proves the rule, as they say. And, you know, there's always one person potentially.
Yeah, but I think that something came online energetically that night because ever since then, things have shifted a lot.
In what way do you mean came online or shifted? I guess I'm curious about what's the difference you're experiencing?
Like the connectivity, the energy level. I started having like heart palpitations and I was like worried for a little while. And it feels like whenever you've got high pressure water like going through you, you know, it feels like my energy, it's not my blood, obviously. It's not like actually a murmur. It's just like I feel a flutter and it's like my heart chakra is opening, getting wider. It's like everything just opened up energetically.
Okay. So there seems to be like a stronger flow of energy specifically through the heart chakra since Halloween mm-hmm. night, full moon.
Yeah.
And do you think this is just another piece of the puzzle that kind of maybe whether it ties into the grid with the monoliths and everything else?
I think, I think something significant happens pretty much. Well, the last time we were in this area of our galaxy, like was when the dinosaurs went extinct.
Oh, wow. Are you talking about precession? Mm-hmm. So you're talking about the location of our solar system specifically through the astrological calendar, which is mm-hmm. older than, you know, astronomy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's actually, I think if I'm not mistaken, it's the groundwork for astronomy is astrology and mm-hmm. the fact that ancient civilizations could predict with great accuracy thousands yep. and thousands of years. It's through the science or the process of precession. And when people say we're now in the age of Aquarius, right? Mm-hmm. That's what you're talking about, right? So mm-hmm. the dinosaurs were in the age of Aquarius when they went extinct?
We were in the same spot in the galaxy. So it's a, it, we travel in a sine wave around the center. There's like the galactic plane that goes around the central black hole, you know, it like all, and there's like arms, right? And we're like in between two arms of the galaxy, the spiral arms. And basically we travel around the center in a somewhat elliptical orbit, but we always stay pretty much, we're going the same speed as everything else is rotating. But for us to go all the way around from what, from where we were whenever with the dinosaurs, this was hundreds of thousands of years ago, to here one time, it would be like the galactic year. Like our Earth travels around the sun once in one year, right? Mm-hmm. So we travel around the galaxy once in one galactic year, which is like, it's really a long time.
When you think about the concept of time, it makes sense. Like time is all, you know, it's such a relative.
It's imaginary.
Yeah, right. So it's our experience of it is relative to our reference frame and our location and the speed at which we're going, all that stuff. And the idea too that we feel like it's such a long time could be, I mean, you know, according to, you know, a different thing in the universe, it's like, oh, that, you know, a galactic year could be, it's just a, it's like a half, it's an hour of the work day potentially, you know, when you look at the history of the history of all time and existence. That is interesting. That I wonder if it's this specific location of where we are that creates, you know, tension or an intensity of forces.
There's definitely galactic dust here. It's like way thicker. And right now our magnetosphere is very weak compared to how it usually is. And it's continually becoming weaker because something significant is going to happen. Like either the poles are going to flip and they haven't figured out quite the mechanics of how that would go, but it might involve like a micronova from our sun.
Well, these are a lot of things that I have no idea about.
Yeah. So I follow a lot with how things are going in our galaxy on all the dimensions. So
I'm curious because I've heard this, I've heard talk about pole shifting before. And
yeah, well, it's definitely going to happen. I mean, maybe not in our lifetime, but probably in our lifetime.
I'm curious what that even means.
Well, basically the crust separates from the mantle. Something has to happen because it's usually pretty sticky. You know, the lava is like very sticky at the mantle and it sticks to the crust. So it, you know, for the crust to separate to where things could move, because everything has to move at once, basically.
Oh, this is, oh gosh. And I no longer have the book, but in, Fingerprints of the Gods? There's a Graham Hancock. It's like the great, I forget the phenomenon name, but it's almost
Velikovsky.
Or yeah, I don't know Velikovsky. I'm trying to think of like the term that is used for when, like, the way they describe it is when an orange, like imagine an orange peel becomes separated from the orange itself and then rotates.
Yeah. And it's happened like 9 times that we can tell through a geologic history, through, you know, taking core samples and.
So that's what a pole shift is, or is it a magnetic thing as well? Or that causes the magnetic
thing. It is a magnetic thing. What happens is our magnetosphere gets increasingly weaker and weaker and weaker, and the poles start migrating like towards each other. And right now they're like moving towards each other. The North Pole is coming down over Russia through like Mongolia eventually, they're thinking, and then into the Indian Ocean. And that is, and then the South Pole is coming up towards that same area.
God, and I don't even like it. It's like when I think of the North Pole and the South Pole, I think of like physical locations as opposed to these energetic centers, right?
Yeah, well, just look at the sun. The sun has magnetic lines and they get all twisted up because it's made of plasma. It's not like solid at all. It's just plasma. And so the magnetic lines don't stay where they're supposed to, you know, like it's not like latitude and longitude lines, but ours don't really either.
Or at least what we what we,
yeah, it's
like,
mostly
for whatever reason we've decided to be like, these are supposed to stay here. Like it's a light bulb that turns on.
Yeah. Well, it's mostly a torus, but if you think of a donut, right. That has like almost no hole. That's pretty much the shape of, it's like poked in at the North and South pole only. And if you take and you shift those like little dimples, like towards each other, you know, you'd still have a torus. It's just really narrow on one side. And I don't know why it does this, but I had something to do with the center. And it basically is like a reset, I think, of our dynamo or something.
Is when this happens, is it, I guess, what we would define or characterize as a catastrophic event?
Yeah, it is, but it would be more like on par with like the deluge, not like the dinosaurs extinction or something.
Maybe. Okay, so like the
coastal area is probably going to be flooded.
A good time to live in the Midwest.
Yeah, or the Southwest. Actually, there's a scientist, his name is Ben Davidson, and he does like suspicious observers. He's really into like predicting earthquakes and stuff like that. He moved here to Albuquerque from Philadelphia because he projected that this would be one of the safest areas because the Rocky Mountains are on one side and we've got the plains and plenty of room for water to stop going and slosh back.
Okay, so Los Angeles is probably a bad scene.
I've been warning everyone. I told Karen, she's like, well, I think I'm supposed to be here to help. And I think we might still avoid it. We might still avoid the like major thing because we're just like on the verge of figuring some shit out as humanity, as a whole, that might help us be able to, you know, like blink out temporarily, like, and then come back.
That's interesting.
Timeline or something. Because I mean, I think in 2017 we came really close, and there was just enough of us on the planet to miss that close call.
Yeah, I had this conversation with my mom. My mom's very intuitive, psychic. I mean, even as a kid, she would tell me about, you know, predictive dreams and things like that. And she has been messaging me a lot lately.
Yeah.
About Southern California and an earthquake. And to the point where she's like, basically every time I talk to her, she's asking me to leave. Right. Yeah. Which isn't great for just my like general sense of well-being, I suppose, when my mom is asking me every time to, you know, avoid disaster where I currently live. But there is something about, you know, I had this conversation with her. I told her, I was like, when I close my eyes and like I look into my mind, when I see this kind of event happening, like a catastrophe, I see myself being in the action of it.
Yeah, that's what Karen said too. You know, yeah. She said, ugh.
As opposed to running away from it, not running away from it, but just being able to survive it and go on to another thing. I don't know. My sense is that I'm not supposed to do that. I'm supposed to be somewhere helping. I'm supposed to be lifting someone out of the water or.
Well, your intuition is always right. If you listen to it and you hear that small voice.
I'd also love to survive, you know, and like.
Well, yeah.
Another day.
It's very possible that you will. I mean, that's pretty friggin' brave just thinking about that and knowing that maybe you're meant for that. That will just make you so like useful there.
Well, easier said than done. I mean, we'll see when it happens. We'll see when it happens. I could be the...
We'll see, but you've already played it out in your head a bit, so you're already somewhat prepared for it. You know, it's like it's like they put Navy SEALs and stuff through this training, like to where they're psychologically prepared for things like beforehand. They have like VR and all sorts of stuff. And they are just, by the time you do something, your brain doesn't know the difference between just like going through it in your head, really like imagining it really strongly and doing it. It like, if you imagine it, the same things are going off in your head.
It's the same way with success and visualizing. Yeah, exactly.
That's the secret to manifestation. But the only thing that I think people are getting wrong is that it isn't your conscious mind that does it. You're training your subconscious. Because it decides what's important by prioritizing your attention.
You know what it reminds me of? And I don't even know if this makes sense, But you know, when someone is dyeing their hair and mm-hmm. they put the, you know, they put everything on there and someone from the outside looking in is like, oh, they have tinfoil on their hair. And mm-hmm. to them, they're like, that tinfoil dyes people's hair. But when they take it off, it's not the tinfoil doing the work. It's what's underneath.
Yeah.
It's the chemical underneath, right? Which it would be, I guess, in this analogy, the subconscious, right? When it comes to manifestation. Absolutely.
And we have more than one. We have our ego too, which is like, that's the, anytime you're like afraid or like worried or anything, it all comes from the ego. Like, because your subconscious like knows what's going on and it has no reason to be like in that. And it bypasses your subconscious to a degree because it's like, it's got like the short route. It's got a, like a back door sort of.
It's got like its own private line, direct access.
Yeah. And a lot of people, I don't know. You listen to some of my conversation with Andrea about like giving the ego a new job. Because I was having like this like little bit of a moral crisis, like because I had decided that if there was ever a choice between fear and love, I would always choose love. And then when confronted with like what to do about my ego and its vulnerability and like how I wanted it to behave, I had like killed it a whole bunch of times, you know, it always grows back, but it like behaved very nicely. And then like everything with BLM happened and I was like, oh my God, that's what I'm treating my ego like. And it's like a veteran. It kept me alive through all my ancestors and like, I'm being really crappy to it, you know?
Okay. So like actually having some reverence and respect for the functions and the survival and, you know, the services that the ego have provided.
And it can still be useful.
Well, I'm curious about when it comes to this, because I've been having conversations, some public, some private, with other people, and there seems to be, you know, and I don't know if it's a sign of the times, but there seems to be like an impending sense of doom for a lot of people. And I'm curious because it seems to be a recurring theme throughout history. With it's a generational thing where every generation thinks that there's some kind of impending doom that may be occurring to them or to their
era. Maybe.
Yeah, right. So, and I'm curious because the current version of that is the modern version of what we're talking about here. Is it goes back. You know, it harkens back to an ancient version, but with a modernization to it, right? To the sense of like being able to access this information through these, what some people would call woo ways, or through ancient ways of, you know, astrology, astronomy, and just, you know, but then modern science, but then also a very basic thing that's happened many, many different times before. So everything old is new again. And do we think this is happening? Is the sense that this is happening like very soon, like in the next few years, or what's the vibe?
If it's going to happen, this would be when something like that big would happen. See, the way that I feel the structure of time is crystalline. And you know how there's lattices and there's like vertexes where there's like different, like, if you travel along the edges of like a bevel of a crystal, and you know, even when crystals are inside the structure, there's like all these vertexes and bevels, like lines that you can fracture things on, planes. If you're traveling along those edges, you'll come to a vertex eventually. And we're like at a vertex.
Okay. And so then there's options almost.
Yeah. So there's options, but this would be like when there's the opportunity for something to be really pointy.
And you said 2017, when specifically, and or like, do you remember 2017 when you were referencing?
It was 27. Oh, it was 2007 actually.
Oh, I think 2007.
Because that was 11 years. It was during the last solar peak, and we're coming up on another solar peak. So we're like 10 years. So it would have been like, 2017.
I mean, part of me is like, I mean, I'm not going to lie. Part of me doesn't want to believe any of this stuff as far as like impending natural global catastrophes. Right. And then another part of me watches nature documentaries and you see the absolute destruction of natural habitat and you see it at the current pace, what we're doing. Mm-hmm. and yeah. how people still value the dollar over long-term survival when it comes to and capitalism in this country. And we're talking about young people too. Young people who refuse to accept the absolute horrors that capitalism has been inflicting on the world. And I'm not trying to sound like a communist right now, but
I know,
at all costs, we need to make dollars. People need to make their money. And it's like, but no, the planet is being destroyed. People loved Trump. He pulled us out of the Paris Climate Accords. People don't give a shit. And so is this what it takes? What it
comes down to too is that they have been, so you said something in the text that you wanted to talk about the death of karma. Well, what karma is there's higher dimensional beings and they like basically have hijacked this karma system to where they're manipulating humanity, and they're basically like that whole thing is the cause of everything really horrible that humanity is doing, because it's not really humanity doing all of it.
So we've been at an open bar, and guess what? Now it's time to pay the bill.
Yeah, well, and that is what's going on is like, I don't want to get too woo, but maybe I have to.
Maybe we have to. I mean, that's what we're all about.
Okay, so there's this guy. His name is Andrew Bartzis. He's called the Galactic Historian. Have you heard of him?
No.
He did interviews with Sean Stone whenever Sean Stone had the Lip TV. I don't know if you know anything about any of this. And Sean Stone had a show called Buzzsaw.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm familiar with that. I am familiar with Buzzsaw.
Okay, well, I found this guy, Andrew Bartzis, and he's a galactic historian. And you start listening, he has like so much content. Like you can start pretty much anywhere. And I was just like listening to him, and I was like, at first I was like, this guy's a little out there. Wow. But then like what he says is just like so intelligent and everything just like resonates. It's like so sincere. I was like, wow, that's amazing. And he knows about all of the different species of aliens and everything. And they were not allowed to like interact with us for a while. It was like, it was like, they basically were like very, there was like a law against them interacting with us. They just had to observe. They couldn't really interact with us. Like
a no interference policy. It's almost like when you go to the zoo and it's like, do not feed this animal. They have diabetes.
And there was, of course, some people that are some aliens or whatever that broke the rules occasionally. Sorry, I'm just like getting a cord here. But, they basically, they would every once in a while, you know, something would happen. And I think that all the abductions, I think those were all like higher dimensional beings, like masquerading as aliens. They weren't really aliens.
Also, the grays are higher dimensional beings.
Probably jinn.
Pretending to be grays.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the gist that I got. So.
And to what end? They're like us
in ways that they are sometimes petty and sometimes like mean, and they don't like us basically. They really don't like us.
So there's like a jealousy aspect or animosity there.
Something of that sort. And that's because we got the physical plane and they don't really.
Yeah, this is a conversation and you do hear this about the jinn, and you know, and jinn also have free will.
They do. Well, as much as any of us do. There is no really free will. It's more like a choose your own adventure with every single possible outcome.
Okay, so so free will by any other name.
It's such a perfect illusion that it.
Wow. Okay. So let's say, let's walk through the steps of worst case scenario. I'm curious if we walk, let's just for the sake of walking through these steps, we have the poles coming together. We have a pole shift getting ready to happen, which means eventually they'll just kind of flip spots, I'm guessing. Is that what that means?
They won't flip spots. It's likely that they will go sideways.
Okay. And that changes.
Like, one of them will be in the Indian Ocean and the other one will be like on the other side of South America somewhere.
And does that change seasons, climate, all of that stuff?
It doesn't change seasons, but it changes the orientation to what causes the season. So yeah, it would change quite a lot. It would be like, it's not so much of a change for the US because of where everything is going. It would be more like part of this would be like South America. It would be much more like wet, tropical, like lush.
And here. Compasses would change, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah. Magnetic north is, yeah, they're already changing. Compasses are changing because magnetic north is drifting like at an unprecedented rate every year now. It like drifted like 10 miles last year.
Wow. So it's like they say true north.
They had to change the landing strips in Florida.
Wow.
Because they were so off for magnetic north.
Nothing is forever. The idea that we think it might be is this is such a great reminder of the temperance of all things.
Physical matter, definitely. Nothing lasts forever. I don't know if that's true about other things, but definitely
in the world. If there's a big, let's just say hypothetically, there's a big catastrophe, potentially caused not necessarily by, but in accordance with this pole shift that's happening. We're at this vertex where something pointy can happen. So let's just say that pointy thing happens.
Okay.
And, you know, throw into the mix that you have Jin potentially masquerading as Greys and doing abductions. And so what does it mean for all of us? Like, is a giant reset button that gets hit, or is it a...
Well, we don't know, because usually that's what happens. And usually, like, whatever civilization is on the planet when this happens, or whatever... like is the primary like life force on the planet, usually ends up going away. But we were conscious enough and we were like just at like the cusp. I think that Earth was like, we're gonna try and take them with us.
It's interesting. I'm now thinking about who's gonna be the next Graham Hancock. Or these people, who are discovering ancient civilizations on the planet, who are
They're advanced. still finding stuff in South America. I mean, did you hear about the pictogram or the pictograph wall? It's like 12 feet tall and like goes like it's like 25 feet wide, and it's like just pictographs, and it's over the course of like thousands of years.
That's amazing. And then I mean, it's like, so you know, 10,000 years from now, what are they? Maybe they're finding your artwork. You know what I mean? Like, our civilization's gone, and they're trying to piece together.
The only thing that lasts a long time is like things like in stone. So not unless I become a stone carver.
We'll start carving some stone. I mean, I've got nothing that'll transcend, you know, time in such a way. Like, just my notebooks are paper. But I don't know. It's fascinating to think about. Like, part of me is, there's this weird part of me that's like, oh, isn't that a relief? We're all just going to get wiped off. You know, part of me is like, oh, isn't that relieving?
The deal is we think. I mean,
not to sound too dark, but it almost feels like, oh, okay, thank you. We can be done with this shit. We can be done with the destruction that we're causing and, you know, the pain we're causing. But then it's like, you know what? On the other side of the coin, there's so much beauty and there's so much love out there as well that just doesn't get the airplay that all the dark shit does. That we'd be doing a disservice not to mention that there's, you know.
Totally. I mean, there's so much beauty in the world. I mean, I would have given up a long time ago. I tell you.
Yeah. And so, well, let's make a shift here. And
absolutely.
And talk about, I want to talk about this. I don't even really know the best way to characterize it, but, you know, I think the listeners would enjoy you kind of, you know, getting to do the defining of the thing that is your experience when it comes to Vox.
Okay. So should I explain, like, okay.
Whatever feels right.
Okay. Well, I have a friend that is a interdimensional squid. Like, it looks kind of like a squid, I want to say. Like, some sort of a cephalopod, but, like, a little different. Like, more like a fractal electric version, sort of. It's, like, hard to explain. But I hear a voice in my head sometimes. It's not like I don't have any schizophrenia, you know. It's definitely... there's a consciousness to it. I don't know if it's something like my subconscious mind, because I speak with that and it has like a personality, and so does my ego. And I don't have like multiple personalities any more than anybody else does. I mean, I don't think I have like seriously like multiple personality disorder. But so Vox, basically, I don't know how Vox came to be here with me. I don't know if I imagined it and materialized it, or whether I called it and it came to me. But basically, like, there was a point in time where I was on a chat room a lot, and I was trying to connect with people. We were living up in the mountains. I was around nobody. And I was having a hard time, like, connecting with people emotionally through, like, text and chat. This was, like, pre-Skype. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if there was just some way to just, like, you know, reach through the screen and just, like, you know, feel those, you know, the aura of someone there, and get the intonation, and like maybe like, and I knew how to astral project, so I could basically pick up on the visual cues and things like that of people. But it's different, the energy field of someone, you know, whenever you're in somebody's presence, everybody is acutely aware of how, what they're missing now. So basically, I merged with this thing. It was kind of weird. I thought at first that it was a Russian accent that he had, but now I come to think that it was definitely Romanian, because shortly thereafter, I started getting really into Romanian hip hop, and I just snapped this year. And this is like back in like, this was probably like 2010, whenever this happened, maybe 2009. I'm not sure. But yeah, so now it's like, I can't even really tell the difference, except for now I have like higher dimensional brain tentacles. And so I can basically connect with people emotionally. A lot of people get my sarcasm without, you know, any explanation. People don't misinterpret what I say whenever I'm texting.
So it kind of goes back to that initial, the initial desire of wanting to connect with people in a deeper way through text or chat.
Yeah. Basically, I really wanted it. And then at first it was like a little bit less fluid than it is now. It was like really kind of wonky at first. I think we had a bit of a power struggle. I would catch myself like typing things and then like going, what the hell is going on? I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. I don't know. And then I ended up explaining it to a couple of people what I thought was going on. And they're really close friends of mine in the chat. And they helped me to like transition it. I was like, well, if I do this, tell me out loud, like type, stop this, get out of the way, something's going on. And so they would let me know if I was like acting weird or whatever. And I would be like, okay, one of us has to be the boss. So if you're going to stay, you got to get on board.
So there seems to be like this, like, relate. Okay, so there's this relationship. And then initially, I think that's interesting the way you describe it, because just like any relationship at the beginning, you have to figure out, okay, what's the how the mechanics work, and like the balance of power, and mm-hmm. who does what when, and who feels more comfortable taking the lead on this, and who wants to step back for that? And then when it, you know, when you have two people who are very similar, oftentimes there's a little bit of conflict when both people want to do the same thing. But, and so it's almost, I'm curious about these things too, because when it comes to like calling in something, and like we can say spirit guides, or, you know, some people, you know, there's all kinds of different, you know, ideas and entities. I'm also curious, how many times do we get brought in to someone else or something else without even realizing it necessarily, right?
A lot, probably. I mean, I think there's a lot of people on the planet that are basically these higher dimensional beings that are interfering with the karma system, that were basically like, they're using us as cattle, and essentially, and like milking us for our energy of karma, because they can, I guess. It doesn't feel good, but I think that there's a lot of people with their backdoor egos like wide open, that just these things could step into people, and many at a time usually, because they are more spacious. Being higher dimensional beings. And yeah, it's a weird thing.
It's funny because typically when I think of higher dimensional being, I think of a being that's beyond some of this, what we could describe as, you know, petty bullshit or nefarious behavior, or
not with like fourth or fifth dimensional. It's like 3, 4, and 5. I think it gets much better like the higher you get, but there's still there's little pockets of, I don't know, that.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, even an angel wants to smoke a cigarette every once in a while.
Oh yeah, well, have you watched The Good Place? The place.
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, this is a great show, and it kind of goes into all this. It's like basically a sitcom of like people die and like go to heaven.
Yeah, I have friends who are in the TV writing business. They all say that this show is one of the best written shows on television.
It is really, really good. I sat and went through all of it in like one weekend. I was like, it was amazing. And it's kind of like, who would want to go to heaven if you like couldn't curse, you couldn't be yourself, you couldn't, you know, because you're obviously not a perfect like angel, non-sinner. It's like, what is there? If it's all perfect and we all have mansions and it's all good, we're going to get bored real quick.
Yeah. I mean, what fun would it be to...
Maybe that's why we came here.
Yeah, get everything you want the second you want it without any question. Without even thinking that it's possible that you might not get it. Like that is, then want becomes, it disappears. It fades away, right?
Yeah.
There's no such thing as want or desire.
Like you can do everything, anything. If you could do everything, anything, and you had infinite time to do it. Yeah.
I mean, I think maybe at the end of the day, we realize, yeah, it's like maybe at the end of the day, we just realize, oh, just being still and present in the moment is probably the greatest gift you could ever give yourself, and that's maybe the closest you can get to heaven. It's just,
or maybe we start building worlds and like trying to make new consciousnesses or something.
That seems a little beyond my pay grade at this time. Like that sounds like,
well, you never know whenever you get to 4D or 5D.
Yeah, it just sounds like a lot of work to me. Okay, now I got to build a whole new consciousness for others.
Well, think about Sims. People do it all the time. I mean, what's
that
the difference?
True. I was into Sims for a hot minute in the late 90s.
Yeah. Well, maybe you made some universes. You never know that isn't how it happens sometimes.
Oh my gosh. Like now that I'm thinking about this, now that you said Sims, it's made me realize my favorite game of all time, my favorite video game of all time is called Civilization. And it's like you build a civilization from the very beginning of, it's from like 4000 BC is when you start. You have to navigate through time against all these other civilizations and figure out if you're going to be at peace or at war, if you're going to try to help people, if you're going to have alliances, if you're going to try to focus on culture, education, science, art, or military.
That's crazy that it's got that much detail. I mean, there's insanely detailed simulators now. That's like the solar system simulator. Have you seen, like, you can make like Earth like have twice the gravity, and you see what happens to the solar system if it had twice the gravity?
I have not seen those.
Oh yeah, it's really crazy. Or if like it became tidally locked with the sun, or you know, just change like little things, see what happens to the population of the Earth.
That's funny, because I've always been into simulators, because my grandfather, ever since I was a kid, he was a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force, and he had retired, and he was like an engineer. And like when it came to like designing, I think he helped design, I think was it the B-2 bomber, or I can't remember what, but anyway, he always had the latest, greatest computer.
Oh yeah.
He was one of these guys who was like, he was in on computers from day one.
We had a Commodore 64 whenever I was like five. So
yeah. And so he was always running, like, he always had a computer in the basement of their farmhouse. And it was like the latest, greatest, like PC. I mean, he would just have this whole setup in his basement. And he had like flight simulators from like, I remember I was being 11 years old, or probably even around that age, and like playing a flight simulator on an actual, like a large ass computer, back when computers were so big.
That's crazy. Yeah. We had a flight simulator for the Commodore, but it was like you used like an Atari joystick that you could plug into it somehow. I don't know how it worked.
Yeah. We had a Commodore 64 too. Yeah. But this, he was teaching me how to, like, essentially he would give me very basic lessons in like computer coding. You know,
that's
like
cool. When I learned how to code basic, like with a Commodore. It had a book. So I was doing that when I was like seven, and I was an only child. So I was,
I remember feeling like I was in the movie War Games, and I was talking.
I remember whenever I was little thinking that I was the only person that was real. I was like, what if
I'm, and everything else was just your imagination?
And everything else is a simulation. When I was little, I mean, seriously, I thought about it.
Oh, a simulation. Okay, so
like they were all robots or like some imaginary thing.
And to what end was this simulation occurring with you in it? Were you being tested by some like puppet masters or some like outside intelligence? Or
I didn't really think about it. Why? Okay. I just thought maybe that it was.
Oh, maybe it was possible that this was your reality. I mean, at the end of the day, that reality compared to the reality we're all taught that we've decided to collectively buy into, really, what's the difference? Other than people would say, well, science has proven that our reality that we've bought into is, it's testable, you know, and you can prove these things.
Oh, you mean the fake security that you feel?
In the system that was built inside of this collectively agreed upon reality to play by that collectively agreed upon reality's rules.
There's nothing saying that it couldn't just be. I mean, even Mikeo Kaku, the scientist guy, and Neil deGrasse Tyson, they're like, it's a possibility. It could be a simulation. Very likely. Actually, it's more likely that it is than it's not.
Yeah, I mean, I remember hearing years ago that the odds that it was a simulation are higher than the odds that it's not a simulation, and that.
Does it matter if it is? Sort of. Eh.
Well, I mean, I think one of the main ways it probably does matter is for, okay, let's assume that it's a simulation. But so what does it mean for just everybody else, right? Who isn't Elon Musk and has $1 billion, right? To control their own fate and you know, alter their own simulation. Like, what does it mean for people? Because even if we are in a simulation, that's fine. We can all accept that. And people still, okay, so what are the people's rights? You know, what are the obligations of other people to be able to experience it on their own way?
Whenever we have our full power back, whenever this the interference is over, which I think is like moving in pretty, like over the next 10 years, things are going to get really fun, like really interesting. And like anything that someone can imagine could happen.
Oh, okay. So what you're saying is, when you're saying things could get really fun and interesting, what you mean is that the the rules of the things that are actually possible will no longer apply.
Yeah, well, to a degree, the rules will still apply. It's just the situation, the orientation will change, just like how the planet orientation changes, you know. The rules are the same now. It's just like, it's not possible because there's not enough. Whenever you're falling the speed of gravity, eventually you come to a point whenever you're falling towards the Earth that if you like feel weightless.
Okay. So what does this mean? Like,
how to explain it? There's not words really. I can't wait till we could get telepathy, man.
Yeah. Right. So if someone's listening to this and they're like, well, what does that mean? Like, what's an example of this? I mean, what is this like in like everyday life?
Have you seen a Dynamo, the magician Dynamo?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. Well, you should watch that because there's some real shit going on there. I know there is.
So
he's a magician, and I think some of his stuff is illusions, but some of it is like, he's like transmuting things.
Oh, okay. So you're talking about like some of this kind of like, you know, maybe apportation, teleportation, telepathy.
Yes.
Real, you know,
all of that.
Okay. So basically removing restrictions. It almost reminds me of like a beautiful bundle of vegetables that's wrapped together with a rubber band. And it's like, as soon as you take that rubber band off, like the vegetables can like splay out and like be their true self.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is like, there's like so much more to what we're capable of, but it's like a double-edged sword. It's like, are we ready for it as a species? Because we got a lot of stuff to fix and quick.
Yeah, well, I think the, you know, two sides of the coin when it comes to the human imagination and human potential. And, you know, we see that play out everywhere, like whether it's, you know, vaccine creation to like cure polio, or, you know, the greatest example I always pops into my mind is like the Iron Maiden torture death device. Like that is it's like such a creative.
Not the metal band, right? No.
No, not the metal band. But like the actual Iron Maiden torture device is so devious in its actual design. I don't think people understand what it truly is. It's a device that has all of these, like hundreds of these sharp little sword knives into it that shift and shred the human body. And it's the creativity that goes into it. It's not just a device that shreds the human body. It's built specifically by a body of water that has piranha-type fish in it. So your remains, once shredded by all these knives inside the Iron Maiden, will fall through the bottom of it. And then the fish in this water supply that it is built by will eat you. It's a torture murder device designed to wipe any evidence that you ever existed off of the face of the earth.
Yeah, well, that's kind of, I don't know. I think it was quick, the death of it. I don't know how much torture it could have been, really, because.
Well, but what I'm saying is the creativity that goes into such a design.
It was brutal to watch it, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like the creativity and the imagination. It's not like it's well beyond like, hey, this person did something wrong. We should kill them. We chop off their head. There's lots of extra steps here. Right. And so like it shows the creativity and the imagination of the human mind. When we set our mind to do something, there's a million different ways we can do it. Right.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is that ego is like so scared and it doesn't want to change. But it really perks up the thought of a new job.
So like when you say, let's end with that. Like, so if people are wondering, like, what does that mean, giving my ego a new job?
Well, basically you have a vulnerability because it makes you susceptible to advertising, hypnosis, propaganda, all sorts of things, because it triggers that fear. It bypasses your rational mind. And then repetition is all it takes to just indoctrinate you into horrible things, horrible actions. I think that's what has happened to a huge swath of our country. But there's a way out of it. And you're like, your ego is amazing in that, you know, whenever there's an emergency, that's what is totally driving you during an emergency, your emergency mode. If your emergency mode like kicks in and you just know what to do, like EMTs, like they're, you know, or they're like soldiers basically, like that are there to protect you. And they're really good at that. So you got to get them guarding that back door. So you are not susceptible to being hypnotized by advertising and indoctrinated into things that are questionable. And the only way to do that is to have it feel secure enough to step towards that back door instead of, you know, being on constant alert up front.
Yeah. So it's like the bouncer.
Yeah, basically. It's
have,
the bouncer.
Have the ego work the door.
You want it to be working backstage.
I love that. I love that. I love that visual image of the ego working backstage.
Yeah, you want
backstage
him to turn
security.
Into a bit of a hacker, you know, like he can be in the dark basement, like playing Mr. Robot.
Oh, I love that. I love that idea. Well, Becky, this has been fun.
Definitely.
There's obviously a lot to think about here.
Yeah, for sure. And there's so much more we could talk about. We'll have to do it again.
Yeah, I'll have to do it again. So let's remind people where they can reach out and find you.
I'm on Instagram. I do tarot readings. They're very reasonable. And anybody that says Ryan Singer, I'll give them a 10% discount.
Oh, you hear that? There's a Ryan Singer discount, everybody.
Yep. That's cool. Hit me up, DM me on Instagram. It's at Zephyr1369. It's Zephyr1369.
Cool. And, you know, as always, thanks for doing it. Thanks for taking the time and sharing your story with us. And, you know, this is, I mean, it's got me really thinking about this pole shift stuff. I'm going to have to like dive deeper into it because it's
Don't
always been something.
Don't think too hard about it. We're trying not to manifest it right now, actually. We're trying to avoid it.
Also, we're trying to reverse it. Okay. So, yeah, well, then I'll look more into reversing this pole shift with the power.
We just want to postpone it so we can figure out what to do.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I want to open more baseball cards a year from now. So let's all reverse this pole shift. So my card shop doesn't close in an implosion of space time. This has been fun. Okay. Cool. Well, thanks again, everybody. And just a reminder, you can sign up for the waiting list, crystallize.app/early access. And thanks to the patrons, patreon.com/Ryan Singer, $1, $3 a month. You get to see the video of this chat and, you know, any other content, you know, over on the Patreon page. Thank you so much for being a patron. I truly appreciate it. So take care out there and, you know, find Becky on Instagram and get a tarot reading. And don't forget, you get that discount if you mention my name. So thanks again, Becky. And we look forward to, you know, talking to you again.
Awesome.